Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Hotel Mars, Episode N. Dr. David Livingston, Dr. Space himself, is here with me, and we're looking to the immediate future about the use of robotic exploration in the solar system and beyond. We welcome Dr. Francis Zhu Franke of the University of Hawaii, the Robotic Space Exploration Lab. Doctor, a very good evening to you. Thank you. We need some definitions first, because in my reporting of the successes of NASA and other big space operations like the European Space Agency, I refer to the probes that are now famous. That would be, for example, the James Webb Space Telescope. I refer to them as a robot. I also think of the satellites in low Earth orbit as robots. Is that a definition that suits your work in robotic space exploration? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me, and good to see you, David. I would agree with your definition. I think a robot is a mixture of software, of electronics, and of some physical form. Now, that may differ from the general perception of some humanoid, which is popularized in science fiction, but I think we can think about robots as any kind of machine, whatever form it may take.
And one more turn of the screw here. A robot is the James Webb Space Telescope. Introducing artificial intelligence into robotics, does that change the assumptions you make about robots and their limitations, or is it just an enhanced machinery?
Yeah, I think that we can extrapolate the idea of intelligence to robotics. So there are some robots that are incredibly dumb, that have very limited functionality. And then we get to increasing levels of autonomy where it can make more enhanced decisions, incorporate more information. So that's a higher level of intelligence.
David, you have a question for the doctor.
Does the intelligence of the robot depend on the people working the robot? Now, I know James Webb's out there really far away, and it's kind of on its own, but it's still got people sending signals and things to it. So is there like a ratio between the people controlling a robot and the autonomy and intelligence of the robot? Or can you define it that way somehow?
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point about intelligence and if it can be broken out. I think there are many different types of intelligence, just as humans have, like emotional and social, mental intelligence. I think robots also have different types of intelligence. There are robots that can do a very complicated task really well, but outside of that task, it's very dumb. So we can think of robots being these computational workhorses, but they are not very adaptable. And that's another type of intelligence distinct from doing something complicated. There's the ability to adapt. So when it comes to doing something really complicated, the James Webb Space Telescope is certainly really intelligent in that regard. But relying on humans, it's dumb in the regard of needing other people to make decisions of like where to point.
Big picture for robots in space. Is there any thinking at NASA, at ESA, even the other big space programs in competition, that robots are the way to explore the solar system and the emphasis on manned exploration is vain?
So, you know, I think there will always be a place for crewed exploration. I think that maybe that need is getting less and less as robots become more capable. I personally believe that if our robots are more mature in their intelligence, that they're able to go further and they're able to go with less resources than a manned mission could. So I think there will always be human exploration, but robotic exploration is definitely increasing in Prussians.
David?
In terms of who's behind the robots, there are great stories where the robots go wild and, you know, go after humankind and this and that and the other. Are there any safeguards on the people operating the robots? So they always say, are there safeguards on the robots to keep them from turning on their master, so to speak?
David, HAL 9000 was protecting the mission. I hope you remember that.
Yeah, no, I remember that. But they always are protecting the mission, right? That's, you know, like the whatever a doctor may say, it's always the same. But what about the safeguards for the people behind the scenes, behind the curtain operating the robot?
Yeah, great question. I just saw a video on Reddit of, so there was this robotic arm that was playing chess with a child. And this child was moving a piece, but then the robotic arm was moving a piece to the same location. And that robot, it has a single objective, to get that piece to that square. But it didn't sense that the child's finger was in the way. All it cared about was like, oh, there's some resistance. I need to push harder. And that arm broke that child's finger. Now, that was a huge flaw on the side of whoever installed that arm, because most robotic arms are compliant, which mean that there's some give. If they sense some resistance, then they will back off. And that's a common safeguard in modern robotic arms. So when it comes to human safety, that's something that roboticists incorporate into a product. But you bring up another good point. There's not only human safety, there's mission safety. So assurance that we can achieve a certain mission. And so that's a different safeguard that maybe we can talk about.
Yes, let's talk about it, because the three law of robotics curses my generation. We read Asimov when we were young. It's like printed on the brain. And so, David, I'm speaking for both of us, all right? We have our limitations. And the three laws of robotics, invented by a man who worked in a candy store, insist that you can only manufacture and accept a robot that will not harm a human being, will attempt to preserve itself, but will not harm a human being. That's science fiction. Does that apply anywhere to the thinking about robotics in the 21st century?
I think so. I think it's still relevant. I think for robotic missions that are solely robotic, we don't have to think about that. We just have to think about self-preservation for the robot and achieving some mission goals. But whenever a robot is in interaction with another human being, you know, a human has to design that robot. And I think that humans want other humans to survive. So that would be a safeguard that they naturally embed. An example maybe would be that the Tesla autonomous driving mode, there's a really interesting moral question of what does the algorithm do when on the road is, you know, an old lady versus an old lady or a small child. And then if the car swerves and it hits a group of people. So what does the algorithm do at that point? I think those gray areas of, do we trust an algorithm to make a decision where lives are on the line? That's a little bit more nuanced, and I'm not even sure how to answer that.
Yes, that does not have an answer, as a matter of fact. Human beings break down at that one. David, we have time for another question.
Where do you see AI and robots blending together in 10 years from now?
Oh, I think that right now, robots and humans work in pretty separate spaces. We see robots in cages on factory floors, for example. But in the future, to really leverage robotics, we want to see more interaction between the human and the robot, where the robot can kind of read a human and can augment a human's ability. And same with the human to the robot. So in the future, I'm really hopeful that we'll see more blending of robots and humans in the same environment.
Is it a corollary to that question? Is it useful to keep robots away from looking like humans or looking like small animals, to make robots that look like mechanical creations and not anthropomorphize them? Is that a distinction you make?
I think it depends on the application. I think when it comes to space, the metrics that we're trying to optimize is just functionality. Whereas in the care sector, like if you have personal home assistants, right, having a humanoid form is more comforting to those who are interacting with it. So there actually is a benefit to a person's experience if the robot takes on a certain form. So it depends.
Yes, I just say in personal reporting, Ingenuity was immediately somebody I wanted to adopt as a small child who could fly. And I worried about him, especially as the dust buildup on his solar paneling and all of that. Now, that is normal human behavior when reporting on something. Do you find the same thing in your lab, that people adopt robots, no matter what they look like, because they're charming?
I can totally empathize with that sentiment. So in our lab, we have a bunch of rovers, and one of them is called Rosie, just after the name of the Rose Lab. And she has a little LED panel where she can make little faces. So lights will light up when she's, you know, thinking. So she has her eyes squinted on the LED panel. So I think it's very, you know, it's fun. Why not? To adopt a humanoid form or just humanoid expressions in our robots.
Dr. Frances Zhu of the University of Hawaii, her lab is the Robotic Space Exploration Lab. David Livingston, Dr. Space of thespaceshow.com. This is Hotel Mars Episode N. I'm not a robot. My name is John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.